country music.
I love country music.
Country music. Country music. Country.
The future of country music's looking good.
I love it.
Country Confidential.
And so all those things kind of came together. And at that point, it was just my job to try to figure out how to relate to stories I'd been told by fans and friends and family. And, in my own stories as well.
LV Shane has never done things by the books. And today we are going to do a deep dive into his new album, Damascus, that is sure to shake up the airwaves. So get ready to come on a journey with us that goes through all the heart, soul, and storytelling of this album as we dissect the tracks, unravel the lyrics, and uncover the magic behind LV Shane's brand new musical masterpiece, Damascus. So grab your headphones and crank up the volume. This is Country Confidential, LV Shane.
Country Confidential.
Great. So I want to kick it off. I know that you are always so creative and constantly kind of thinking about what's next, but when did it kind of dawn on you that it was time to start to create this album?
Oh, well, we put out Backslider in October of 2021, and in January of 2022, I went into the studio. I went into a house on the shore in Alabama that my producer had turned into a studio. We started writing for it that week. So just a few months after that project came out, we were working on Damascus.
Oh my gosh. So how was it going right from Backslider, which we loved, into Damascus? Was it tricky to kind of switch gears, or were you like just ready to get more stories out?
No, that's originally where the idea for the record title came from. It was at that writer's retreat in Alabama. I was talking to a co-writer friend of mine, Ryan Tindall. We were talking about the Apostle Paul and the road to Damascus. And I was like, damn, I feel like I'm on my own road to Damascus right now, trying to figure out what in the world I'm going to do with this next record. And, so that was the initial thought of the record and the struggle of trying to figure out what was going to go on. Toby Keith, I went to his Songwriters Hall of Fame induction during that process. And he was talking about how, you have your whole life to write that first record. And then the second one is the doozy. So.
Right. I love that. So speaking of it being a doozy, I mean, you had a hand in writing all of these songs, which I think is so impressive in its own right. But what was the most fulfilling part of being a part of all of these songs?
I think it was like, I didn't really have a purpose when we wrote Backslider. I was just bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and put all of what I thought were my best songs from the few years I'd been in Nashville together and made some kind of concept about, where I come from and how I got here and everything. But I still didn't really know. I knew what I was doing. I knew how we were doing it, but I didn't really still know why I was doing all of this other than I just wanted to do this other than the other jobs I had done in my life. But now I feel like I have the why a lot more. So this project's been a lot more focused. The overlaying theme I feel like has just been struggle, and it's been like what all of us have kind of been privy to over the last few years has been a lot of working class struggle, a lot of addiction. I got very interested in prison reform because of a good friend of mine who is serving a pretty hefty sentence right now, and so all those things kind of came together. And at that point, it was just my job to try to figure out how to relate to stories I'd been told by fans and friends and family and, in my own stories as well.
I love that. Were all of these songs written on that retreat or at least started at this retreat, or did they kind of ebb and flow then throughout the year and last year?
No, there was so Jones and Baptized, Forgotten Man, Chicken Shit. I think those were the four that were written in Alabama. It just, what that did was those songs are so different from each other, like sonically, stylistically, everything. But I knew I loved all of them. So I was like, well, how do I put all these on a project together and make it make sense? And so I kind of turned back to the concept, Damascus, which I started thinking about the word, and Damascus is also a type of steel where you take a bunch of different types of steel with different carbon values and nickel values, and you forge it all together, and you've probably seen like knives made out of it. It has all these lines in it and stuff, you know? So that comes from like melding all these different elements together. So I was like, well, if I make that part of the concept as well, then I have a lot of freedom to just explore sonically and melodically and lyrically and do all this different stuff on the same record. And it has a purpose. It's all to come together to make this blade, you know? So that kind of gave me the, those four songs really gave me the freedom I needed to pursue the rest of the record. Pill was the only song that was written before that. I wrote that song about 2 years before that session. It just felt like it needed a home on a record, and I wanted to put it out, so we put it on this one as well.
I love it. So how did you go about choosing the songs? I feel like it's choosing your children. Like, you get to belong here. So talk to me about the process. I mean, were you writing? I mean, I guess you were kind of saying you knew you were writing for this kind of style and this theme of the record, but were there a couple that didn't quite make it, or was it pretty easy to come down to this, 12 or 13?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't write a whole lot of songs. After Backslider, I think we wrote like 20 something songs maybe. So I wasn't, after the initial success of Backslider and My Boy, I found myself in a funk and a rut, and I just did not feel like writing a ton of music. So this was going to be a 16 track record, but there were some issues with budget and stuff like that, so we had to narrow it down. If the record does well though, hopefully it'll do well enough that we could put out a little extended version later on. But yeah, I mean, the sequencing kind of came by force. Like, I just didn't have a whole lot of songs, and also by focus, you know, because I was so focused on what I wanted the record to feel like and the topics that I want to talk about. So it kind of came easy. I don't want to say easy, because Jesus Christ, it was a struggle at times, but putting it together, sequencing it, became easy once I had the songs in front of me.
I love it. I'm always so interested on why people start their project and end their project on a certain song. So why kind of open up this whole story and this kind of theme of Damascus with Outside Dog?
Outside Dog was a lot of frustration and a lot of ego. You know, when I took those first four or five songs in to the record label, and initially it was just like, hey man, there's not really anything here. We can't do anything with this. And so I was pretty pissed off about that. And I disagreed, and I went out and wrote some more, and I brought some more in, and it was kind of the same thing. And, you know, I've got a great team, you know, and I love the fact that I was challenged. I didn't like it at the time, but I'm happy to have a team that is willing to challenge me and to continue to reach out there for something. But it got to a point where I was like, I kind of had made a decision that if I couldn't put this record out, I was going to go back home, and I was going to go work for my father-in-law or go drive a truck with my brother and my dad or something. And then, you know, I got a phone call. I was like, hey, let's do this, you know? And so pretty much here's the rope, pull yourself up or hang yourself with it, you know? And we just got to work on it. And now I feel like this record, I almost wish it would have been my first record. I'm so much more excited about it than I was my first one. Sorry, I got off track there a little bit, but I can be tangential.
Hey, so I love that. That's what this is all about. You know, I mean, I think I've become, because I'm such a fan first, I'm such a sucker for your thought process and how this really happened, because what I don't think a lot of people understand is it is a give and take, and you have a team behind you, and you don't just get to go into a studio and say, let's have fun today.
Well, see, that is a huge issue for me, you know, because I feel like the most creativeness comes out of those times where you're able to just go in and have fun. And I'll talk more about that, but I want to finish answering your question, because that was a really important part of sequencing the record. We put Outside Dog first because that was me on an airplane on my way home from UK with a head full of you know, whatever I was taking at the time, you know, because I found myself back in some old struggles and dancing with some old demons for a little while. And I'm on my way back from the UK and I'm sitting there and I've got headphones on. I'm playing this track that we kind of made up for Outside Dog. Me and Oscar and Jonathan Sherwood had got together and wrote like part of the chorus, but we couldn't figure out what the idea was about. And on the plane ride, I was like, you know what? I've got this little dude that's locked in the basement in the back of my brain, my ego, that's always just trying to, he wants out. But, you know, I try to live a humble life and have a lot of humility. But I was like, you know, I'm just going to let this guy out on paper right now. I'm just going to get it out. And so I thought about all the times that I felt like I should have had a chance and the chance didn't come and all this stuff. And I just put it down. I showed up, I sang it in the studio, we made a demo. I was like, that's cool, I'm glad I got it out of my system. But I played it one night at a motorcycle rally, and this girl walked up to me. I just wanted to try it. I was like, let's see if people think I'm completely nuts or if they like it. And this girl walks up to me after the show, and she said, my dad's black, my mom's Jewish, and I grew up in Central Alabama, and I never felt like I had a song until I heard Outside Dog. And I was like, well, that solidified it for me. It had to go on the record, you know. So if it helps one person in some kind of way, I'm down with that. But since it started with so much ego, I felt like there was a lot of topics that needed to be like really focused on in the record. So I wanted to get the ego out of the way. And then since we started so far on that side of the spectrum, I felt like ending the record with humility and, you know, a little tip of the hat to my religious and upbringing and hymns and all that would be a good way to counteract that. And then as it came together, it was like it all, you know, and I'm not trying to push my beliefs off on anybody, but as I listened to the record, as it was over and I looked at the sequencing, I was like, man, this whole record is just about a guy trying to find God. And so it all kind of came together for me in a cool way in that way.
No, I agree with you. When I listened to it, that's kind of the vibe I got, and I felt like it was this really creative redemption story that had all of these ebbs and flows and ups and downs. And then you kind of ended it with a bang. So, I mean, I love that song. I selfishly love that I've gotten to listen to it a lot, but the other song that really kind of took me by surprise was your collab with Little Big Town with First Place. When I saw that on the track list, I was like, oh, this is going to be really good. Was it always going to be a collab? You know, how did that kind of whole creative process start?
Oh, it's such a cool story. It proves that you can still kick down doors and cool shit can happen. You know, I was on my way to Pigeon Forge to write with some friends of mine, Dan Couch, Adam Wood, Jacob Miller. And I had Boondocks stuck in my head. I don't know if I'd heard it on radio earlier that day or what, but I'm driving. So I play it again in my car. I was like, this is such a cool song. And then we get there and we write a couple songs. And then Dan goes to get some ice in his drink. And he just puts his cup up to the refrigerator and a couple ice cubes come out. And he pulls his cup back and he goes, little less ice in a glass, bartender, leave some more room for the old number 7. I was like, damn, what's that? And he's like, I don't know, we should write it. So we start writing it. And I was pretty well into a bottle at that point in time. And I was like, you know what, guys? I'm going to get Little Big Town to sing on this song. And everybody's like, okay, buddy, cool. So we finished the song. I was feeling pretty good. We videoed us, like, just jamming it in the cabin. And I had just enough liquid courage. And me, I hit up Karen Fairchild on Instagram, sent her the video. I was like, hey, listen to Boondocks today. Thanks for the inspiration. That's not what I actually wanted to say. So I had a little bit more liquid courage. And I messaged her back and I was like, oh, screw it. What I really mean is if y'all like this, it'd be sick if you'd sing on it with me. And I woke up the next day with a headache, a hangover, and a message from Karen Fairchild saying, we love it. Let's do it. So, and those guys were so cool to work with. They showed up. They put in the time. Like, we actually ran out of time. That's why they didn't have like a main part on the song where it was just them singing. Because they put so much time into doing the background vocals and everything and making sure their parts were right and they sounded great, that we ran out of time. So it ended up being, you know, LV Shane with, you know, Little Big Town singing some badass background vocals, which is sick to me, but I love and hate it at the same time. It was super. In this business, people tell you that there's like certain ways to go about things. You need to reach out to the manager or their booking agent or blah, blah, blah. But sometimes, like, you just got to do what you feel like you should do. And then now I got a song with Little Big Town.
I mean, I remember that's what Carly Pierce said. She like DM'd Morgan Stapleton and here they were. So here's your sign just to slide into someone's DMs, right?
Yeah. It don't always work. I mean, there's plenty of other artists out there that I've reached out to and I have no shame. It's like, if I think this works for this piece of art, then I'm willing to make the phone call, send the email, whatever. And it's not, you're not always, more often than not, you're not going to get a response, but every now and then the stars align. So
I love it. So I think my other favorite part of this project is that this sonically, each song is so different, but each song is so LV Shane. So why was it so important for you to get the sonics right for these songs?
You know, I really love what Oscar Charles does. He produced Backslider as well. But Backslider wasn't like 100% of what Oscar Charles does. It was Oscar and I realizing that we had an amazing first opportunity to do something with a major label in town. And so we kept it like, we kind of relied on 90s country and classic rock a lot for that first record. But I always told Oscar, I was like, you know, if we do this the next time, we're doing your thing. And so this time we used studio musicians on like 2-3 tracks, I think, or studio band. But we were getting such cool stuff with our friends during writing the songs that we were like, why don't we just use our friends? That we've got friends that are, they're not like the most pristine players in the world, but they have cool stuff that they do. So we literally, I moved his wife out of their house for a week, got her an Airbnb with my wife and their kids, you know, and our kids, I mean, and we took over their house for 4 or 5 days. We stayed there all night. We got up early. We got to work. We stayed up late working. And it just kind of, I feel like the music just kind of, all these guys that I wrote this project with, we're all very like-minded in music and what we love. And, but Oscar has this way of, like, he's such a purist in so many ways. Like, he doesn't like to tune vocals. Like, there's not a lot of tune vocals on this album. There's, everything's like old vintage stuff. And he's just a little mad scientist once he gets in there mixing, you know? So I lean on him a lot. Obviously he let me like, it's got my touch on it. And I was very involved with doing everything, but we've worked so much together that now we kind of just line up. And then, you know, I have a problem with just like passing things over and letting people do their thing. I'm a little bit of a control freak, but I read Rick Rubin's book, The Creative Act, and I bought everybody that played on the sessions a copy of it and had them read it before we went into the studio. And there's one part where he says, after you get done recording, that your job is done. So I gave it to Oscar, and he spent 2 or 3 weeks just like really going through the songs and doing his thing, and he turned it in. And I said, do you think it's good? He said, yeah. I said, well, it's good, then let's go, you know. And it was a big exercise for me of like just letting go and letting somebody have control. And I mean, he knocked it out of the park. He killed it.
I love it. I know. I'm also trying to be a reformed control freak. So I completely feel you there. When you put your name on something, you want to make sure that it's perfect. But besides that, challenging yourself in that way, how else did putting this project together really challenge you?
Well, I had to, like I said, there was a point in time where I kind of had made the decision that I was going to allow things back into my life that I had kind of said I wouldn't allow in my life again. But I was struggling to keep up. I want to give people that have encounters with me 100% and I want them to have a good experience. And it was just weighing on me so much. So things got in the way and I let things happen that I didn't want to happen, let some things back into my life. But I remember also going back to God here. I remember having a conversation. Well, you know, talking to God one day and just being like, I feel like I got to go down this road. Just don't let me go too far. So he didn't let me go too far. But in the midst of it, there, like I said, there's a lot of struggle that's covered in with songs like Pill and 215-634, Appalachian Alchemy, Winning Horses. I feel like there's just a lot of struggle on the record, Jones. And because I was in the state I was in, I was able to, relate to a lot of the struggle that I was witnessing in the world. And so I had to go through that, but it definitely helped me, I feel like, put these songs, put the right attitude on the songs. I want to say attitude because although I am a writer on all this stuff, I'm in no way like the main writer on all of this stuff. You know, my friends that I've wrote this record with, they understand me better than I do myself sometimes. So I never want to take a lot of credit for some of the greater ideas, especially, you know, but the only one that was just me was Does Heaven Have a Creek? And that was just a really personal song, a tribute to my grandmother.
I love it. Before I ask you this next question, I forgot to ask you about one of my most, or the one of the most intriguing songs on the record, Chicken Shit. How did that name come out? Because if you can be inspired by an ice dispenser in a refrigerator, I have to hear about how this one came to be.
So Ryan Tindall again was, he grabbed a guitar. We were in Alabama and he grabs his guitar and he says, what should I play? I said, play some of that chicken picking shit. So he starts to, you know, and then we start jamming and Oscar's like, hey, we should record this. This is feeling cool. So we start recording just the music and he says, what should we call it? And Tindall goes, Chicken Shit. I was like, all right, cool. So we jammed for about 20-30 minutes and we hadn't written any words. I just turned around, looking at everybody. I was like, you know, we really could write a song called Chicken Shit. And they, you could have seen their eyes run out the back of their head and out the door. I was like, but hear me out. So I started telling this story about getting caught by my buddy's grandpa drinking his grandpa's moonshine when we was a kid. And, there was a chicken involved in that story as well. It ended up being catfish bait. You know, it was the 90s. People weren't as sensitive as they are these days. But yeah, we went from that. And then as we got through the chorus kind of just wrote itself. And then the second verse, one thing I've noticed is I've seen a lot of artists during this process that, like, when I see them early on, they'll have something that's like super authentic, genuine to them, original. And you see people kind of get caught up in the chase. You know, they might have a little success and then there's, you want that again, obviously, but sometimes it's just too many voices and you end up doing things that you wouldn't do artistically. And I hated seeing that with some artists that I'd grown to love. And then you see this progression that starts sounding more and more Nashville, you know, whatever it is. I'm not trying to be too much of an asshole about it, but you know, that second verse was supposed to be more of like a, hey, like a call to action, like, hey guys, you know, go ahead, put your money where your mouth is, more walking, less talking about it, drown out the noise and find what your sound is. So it was kind of like a almost like meant to be inspirational to other artists that hear that and like, oh, you know what, by God, this is what I do and this is what I'm gonna do. So
I love it. I think my favorite thing besides the songs on the record is you dancing on top of a piano for the album art. Can you talk to me about that decision? You looked so joyful and it was so fun because it was the first thing I saw. And then the thing I went back and looked at again after listening to the album. And it just, I feel like it sums it up so perfectly, but why did that have to be the album cover?
Well, hey, I love the juxtaposition of like, just how joyful that photo looks. And there were some people, I was like, I don't feel like this fits the record. But if you look real close, there's also a glass of whiskey in my hand and a blunt in my hand. And so there's like, you have this like heavenly scene. And it's like, it almost looks like you're in heaven and you're just dancing on top of a piano. But you also have these vices that you had while you were here, you know? And these are like the most mundane of the vices, you know? They're not that big of a deal unless they are a big deal. But I just loved how it looked so happy and carefree. But if you look a little closer, there's still a little bit of that struggle in there. And that was like right after I'd kind of got the demons back out of the way. I hate using that word. It sounds so dramatic, but got the drugs out of the way. So that's quite as dramatic, but it just is what it is. So you know, I still like to have a little drink here and there. Drinking's never been an issue for me, and I try to convince myself that I like to smoke, but I just don't. It makes me paranoid. I'll do it at a campfire if you went in right, but it's just not really my thing. But it was a way to just kind of insert a little bit of that in that image. And, you know, it's turned out to be like one of the things that people have talked about the most. So I love that people responded well to it, because it was another thing with the project that I had to kind of stand up for and stand my ground on.
I love it. So to wrap things up here, what are you hoping that fans get out of this? And even new listeners, what are you hoping the takeaway is?
I feel like Backslider, I was like, hey, here I am. This is a little bit about me, but it was a lot of the most human elements were kind of glazed over. And so I just, more than anything, I want people to have a better understanding of where I come from, where I'm headed with my music, and that, you know, that there's no fences around what we're doing, you know, or what we'll talk about. And hopefully it invites people to be more open with stuff that they're dealing with, whether it's, you know, work, struggle, drugs, alcohol, whatever, you know. 215-634, we went and played a prison in Eastern Kentucky, and I played that song for the inmates. I played a lot of these songs, Pill and everything, for the inmates. And, you know, if I could get anything I want out of this project, I feel like I may have already got it through this show. This guy got out about 2 months afterward, and he got on Facebook and he's like, hey, I was at the show when you came to the prison. I'm out now, and I've dedicated, you know, myself to working with a rehab program as a, you know, as an affiliate of the rehab program to work with other people who are going through that. And he said he was just inspired by the songs and the show. And, you know, I hope that we inspire people. I hope somebody is listening to Peel one day and they're in the middle of that struggle, and then that song makes them kind of stop and think and go home and try to make some changes in their life. But also, you know, I hope people realize that I don't take myself entirely too seriously when they hear like Fan on High and Chicken Shit, you know? So it was important to insert a little humor in the record as well.
Awesome. Well, I love it. And I love that I get to listen to it before anybody else. So thank you so much. I also wanted to tell you, when you were at Joe's on Weed for your Backslider tour, and that is still one of my favorite shows that I have ever seen ever. So
that was a really fun show. I really enjoyed that night. And the turnout was so cool for a Thursday night. I'll never forget that. So
my name is Bobby Dixon, and I am the founder of Backstage Bobby, a country music news outlet that highlights Chicago's country music scene. Follow me on Instagram at Backstage Bobby, and be sure to subscribe to the Country Confidential podcast to hear more insider info directly from all of your favorite country music artists.
Country Confidential.
The All Country News Country Confidential podcast is produced by Horseshoe Media. You can submit your artist, organization, or event to us at allcountrynews.com for a chance to be featured. If you loved this episode, please rate and review wherever you're listening. And a huge shout out to our friends Restless Road for recording our incredible theme music for this podcast.